is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude. Welcome to another international edition of Dudes on Hockey. I'm Doug. This is Mike via Skype.
Dude, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on over, literally, on the other side of the world, dude? How are you?
I'm doing well, dude. It's the late evening here. It's nighttime, and I know it's morning where you are, so... But, you know, the international coalition, we can all join together and in harmony when we talk about watching NHL Game Center replays. So that's what I've been doing.
How is the cricket world out there, dude? What's the latest going on out there? Have I don't even know what the team names would be. Do they have team names like out here?
No, I was asking about that. Apparently all the cricket here is all just international teams playing each other. So, like, England versus India, Pakistan versus the West Indies, Australia versus whoever. So it's all international teams, and I don't really understand it, to be honest with you.
Have you tried to watch it?
I don't understand, like, the league schedule by any means.
They play each other over and over and over again?
It seems that way. There's, like, three or four different formats to cricket matches, and then they just sort of rotate them and they play each other.
Dude, let's get down to brass tacks and talk about some Sharks hockey. They're the hottest team in the NHL coming into the game last night against Phoenix, where they were thermonuclear frozen. But they got coyoted.
Yeah.
They got Dave Tippetted. But they were 8-1-1 coming into that game, playing a Phoenix team that also was pretty hot. I guess, should we go from... I mean, do you want to hear the good news or the bad news first? I mean, that's sort of it, because the bad news is definitely last night, but the good news are the first two games before that. So what do you feel like, dude? Good news or bad news?
Let's do bad news quickly and then good news last so we can savor it.
I like it. I like Indy's made you such a positive person.
It is.
Maybe it's
all about peace and love.
Okay. And whatever, Gandhi. You're the Gandhi of hockey. Last night, the Sharks against Phoenix, they lose 3-0 in a game that was just really frustrating to watch, dude. Did you get to see any of this game across the world?
I didn't get to see the entire game. I saw the condensed version, read the highlights, looked at the stats. The stuff I saw, at least in the condensed version, which can be skewed, is that it seemed like Mike Smith made a number of near miraculous saves on open net situations, and they managed to score, you know, at least one goal that was totally not Grice's fault. I thought the second goal might have been his fault. It looked like the shot was going wide and he kicked it and it came back.
No, that definitely was his fault. That second goal, what went?
But the third goal was a 2-1.
Yeah.
So it's like, how is that his fault?
Yeah,
so,
that's not his fault either. That last goal, from what I saw, was actually our good friend Dan Boyle, I think, would take the mea culpa on that, because he had released all the way down the ice, and the Sharks got caught with one defenseman back there because I think he was expecting a very quick breakout, and it didn't happen that way. They got trapped up in the middle. And Patrick Marleau ends up playing defense, and that's what happened. Patrick Marleau wasn't anywhere near his man. And there you go. I mean, I don't think Phoenix is very good, and when we lose to Phoenix, it just is pretty irritating. I watched them play Montreal this week also, and I got irritated watching them. Like, This goes into a different topic, you know, where we talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Flyers this week and the Pronger standoff and them refusing. I mean, this isn't quite that bad with the 1-3-1 that the Lightning have been playing. But just the neutral zone, you know, tar that they put out there basically, and they just completely trip you up, and the Sharks were not able to figure it out last night. But
clearly other teams have figured it out, because Phoenix is not exactly tearing up the NHL. So
yeah, but they've got the same record as we do, 19 points. We're all tied, I think, for sixth place mean, they've been way better than the first week, you know, of the season where they started off slow. That they've been winning, but unfortunately, they're winning like this. You know, it's an irritating style to watch, and that sort of segues into the Minnesota game, because I think the Minnesota team that I've been expecting was a little bit more like Todd Richards' Minnesota. And Mike Yeo's Minnesota is a lot more like Dave Tippett's Phoenix. It is a lot of the same stuff. They just didn't do it as well as Phoenix, dude.
Right. Yeah, they have a lot of young guys on the back end, Minnesota does. So, you know, they basically have like Marek Zidlicky and like a bunch of toddlers, essentially, on the blue line.
I've never said, who's that, so many times in an NHL game. I didn't know. At least four players on Minnesota, I had no idea who they were. And that doesn't happen to us very often when we're sort of stumped. And these guys weren't just called up for that game. I mean, they've been playing, you know, regular NHL shifts, you know, for most of the season, and I'd never heard or seen of them before. The big story, I guess, with that game is the homecoming of Heatley and Seto and Brad Staubitz, who also was given a nice little video moment on the board. And then, you know, Havlat and Burns playing against their old teams. Really, none of those guys did much. I mean, Burns got a secondary gift assist on one of the goals, but all of them were maybe not. But Burns had an impact, I think, on the power play in terms of just, getting some shots on net, but for the most part, Heatley and Seto did nothing, and I enjoyed every moment of it, dude.
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, these guys are supposed to be sort of the new cornerstone of the Minnesota offense, and I mean, Setoguchi drew a penalty from Douglas Murray, took a penalty on Setoguchi off a faceoff, and that seemed to be sort of the beginning and end of Setoguchi's contribution to the entire evening. I didn't see Heatley do really anything at all. So it was,
yeah.
I mean, they're much more important to Minnesota than Havlat and Burns are to San Jose. Not to say that those guys aren't important to San Jose, but I mean, basically Minnesota wanted to move to a more offensively potent style, and Heatley and Seto were supposed to be a huge part of that. And at least, you know, on Thursday night, they weren't, which was nice.
Dude, I was surprised that Heatley was so invisible, because I can't remember that really being the case in San Jose. He was always present every night. You knew he was on the ice. Is my sarcasm coming through Skype?
Yeah, irony does work 12 and a half hours off. I just let you know. It's definitely very very palatable.
Even strength, Heatley was a non-factor, and it was nice to see, you know, that we didn't give up some juggernaut who's tearing it up. I think he's leading them in scoring, but against the Sharks, he went David Blaine and disappeared, and that's all I care about. And when they come back in a couple weeks, you know, I'm not sure it was the Sharks' defensive job on him, that they just know to maybe put a little bit of body on him and he's going to disappear or what. But I guess you've got a pretty good scouting report on Heatley and Seto when you've been playing with them for several years, right?
Sure. And those are sort of, you know, the big keys. You always want to pay attention to the big players on the other team. And I mean, as much as we like those guys when they were in San Jose, and as good of players as they are, it's not exactly Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaf here. You know, I mean, it's not quite the same caliber of top line that the Sharks have been used to seeing in the Western Conference. And, you know, especially with finally a breakout of Anze Kopitar, something that I've been sort of waiting for the past 4 years. I've expected this guy to sort of, you know, be near the top of the leaderboard in points or some major statistical category. And it seems like he's finally, you know, at least, you know, in this shortened, what are we, 16, 17 games in, Anze Kopitar is becoming a powerhouse of scoring with a new rejiggered Los Angeles offense.
Yeah, well, let's jump right into the Kings game. The Sharks win that game 4-2, and I don't know. I didn't find the game to be as exciting as maybe I wanted it to be. I thought that both teams really were kind of feeling each other out for some of the process. And then, you know, there were 12 penalties taken in that game, a lot of special teams happening. And that's how the Kings scored both their goals, was on the power play. So even strength, the Sharks did pretty well. Am I right on that, dude? Now I'm doubting my stats. Matt D'Agostini. I'm pretty sure the Sharks
scored two power play goals in that game, didn't they?
Yeah, but I think the Kings did too, dude.
I know the Jack Johnson goal is a power play goal. Pretty sure.
Yeah.
That was the first goal.
Yeah.
The first goal was power play.
Yeah. Anyways, I guess it's not that important in the international scheme of things, dude. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, in that game, even though the Sharks won, I didn't think they played as well as they could have. You know, we've seen them play well. Like, it wasn't like the Detroit game where I felt like they played really well and they won. I felt like they won this game and it wasn't even their best effort. And that is that both the LA goals were power plays. Just confirming it. Confirm, dude.
All right, dude.
So, even so, just not their total best effort. So I guess in a way, that's good. But the Kings have been struggling. I mean, they've really been struggling lately. But not just Dustin Penner, but a lot of other things. And rumors of Terry Murray getting sent to the curb. Dude, it's a little early to push the panic button on the Kings, don't you think?
Yeah, just a bit early. I mean, considering they got rid of a big piece in Wayne Simmonds and brought in a big piece in Mike Richards. You can't drop these guys quite yet, although clearly the Blues didn't get that memo. I was actually pretty surprised at that move. I didn't expect, of all the teams to pull the trigger on getting rid of a coach, that it would be Davis Payne getting the axe. And you knew Ken Hitchcock was sort of waiting in the wings to whatever job was coming available, but if you asked me for three or four teams at the beginning of the season that were in jeopardy of losing their coach, you know, 15 games in, St. Louis definitely would not have made my list. How surprised were you?
Actually, not that surprised, dude, because I think St. Louis made a commitment this year to really trying to get a playoff spot by bringing in a bunch of veterans like Langenbrunner and Arnott and Nickel and our favorite player, Kent Huskins. And for them to kind of middle around, I mean, the point that they made is Davis Payne was like a player's coach. And last year, they kind of lost control of some of that stuff, like TJ Oshie just like taking a Ferris Bueller's day off and like not coming, you know, to practice or whatever. And nothing, you know, he got benched or something. Like, you've got your best player, arguably, like your best offensive player. I mean, maybe, you know, David Backes would take some exception to that, but Oshie's got some great raw talent, and then he just decides he doesn't want to show up one day, and Halak struggles, I think, had a lot to do with it, and Payne is starting to favor Brian Elliott, and I can't imagine that ownership was really, or not ownership, they don't really even have ownership right now, but that like Armstrong was probably not excited about that, you know, he probably didn't care how good Elliott's playing. You're going to play Halak.
Yeah, he signed for years, and he was a really good pickup at the time, and maybe he struggled a little bit, but you can't ditch him now for Brian Elliott, who's, you know, not exactly had a storied NHL career yet.
You know, people were making some points that, you know, Lombardi has been pretty loyal to Terry Murray, and that it would be even more shocking if he abandoned Murray during the middle of the season, especially with there not being that Ken Hitchcock out there to take his place. You know, I mean, that was sort of the easy choice for any team that fired their coach. You know, you fire Terry Murray, you're going to bring in Davis Payne? You know what I mean? Like, what's the answer?
Yeah.
You know,
that's not going to happen.
So I think they're definitely going to wait out that situation over there. So I guess a pretty successful week, dude. 2-1, good wins over two teams that, you know, Minnesota contending for a playoff spot. I find them to be a mirage. I don't think they're going to be able to hang on the way they are. There's a lot of teams like that right now. Edmonton, Florida, teams that are playing way over their head, But Toronto. But then there's also the Dallas Stars, who we're going to see this week. We're going to Dallas over the weekend to play the Stars. They've cooled off a little bit, dude. They're 6-4 in their last 10 after just being world beaters. Gogo's now hurt. He broke his hand.
Oh, he did. Okay.
He did. He's out for 4 weeks. I think that's going to hurt them. But what do you make of Dallas? Is this a real contender, or are they a pretender, dude?
You know, the only thing about Dallas is that, you know, they quietly have good players that are probably better than most people give them credit for. And Louis Erickson certainly at the top of that list. And as much as I hate to say it, Mike Ripero's probably on that list as well. But I mean, Louis Erickson is quietly a very good player. And them losing Brad Richards, you know, we all expected them to take this big step back. But apparently they bought into some sort of, you know, cockamamie team concept or something. I don't know what. I don't know how they do it. But, you know, I can't see, looking up and down that lineup, how this team is doing as well as they are. I can't. I mean, Sheldon Surrey is a good success story, and I'm not super surprised by Sheldon Surrey playing very well. I mean, clearly he was in the completely wrong situation in Edmonton.
Right.
But, so, you know, this is a player that we certainly talked about when he was a free agent, about somebody the Sharks might like to get. So to see him come back into the league and want to prove something doesn't surprise me at all. But that still doesn't hide the fact that I think they're missing about five horses that they need in order to be a really good playoff team. So I can't see them being at the top of the Pacific at the end of the year, but
no.
You know, are they just going to pull like the same swan dive that they pulled last year?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I don't know. I want to see them. Like, I want to see them play the Sharks and see that how they measure up against a team that I think we both consider to be one of the best in the NHL, and the Sharks. I mean, how deep they are, and can Dallas really match the Sharks? Are they going to play the Sharks sort of like how they've been playing, or how Phoenix plays them, you know? Doesn't seem to be their style. They're giving up a ton of shots. They're taking shots. I mean, Dallas seems to be a little more open up, you know, than they're not winning with gimmicks. They seem to be winning with legitimate talent. So we'll see. Can Lehtinen even stay healthy? I mean, he's going to slip on some bacon fat and fall down again, and he's never played a full season. Dude, let's do some questions really quickly. We've had some people waiting on some questions for a while. Got one from Matthew talking about the penalty kill. He says, dudes, the PK seems worse than 2010-2011, which many of us wouldn't have thought possible. What are they doing wrong, and can they fix it, dude?
You know, the only thing I can compare the Sharks' penalty kill to is other teams' penalty kills. And, you know, I'm not a coach. You know, I'm not a guy that you know, has a lot of background in, you know, dealing with coaching and different strategies for the penalty kill. But the main difference I see between the Sharks' penalty kill and other teams' penalty kills is that other teams seem to be way more aggressive.
Right.
Especially on the points. Points in the half boards, you see other teams, like, they have that guy, either the, you know, the defenseman, you know, in the box, or the guy at the point, like, really come out and contest the puck all the time. Like, not a whole lot of time or space evident for anybody on the power play. And sure, it opens up a little bit of extra space in the interior of the ice, and it probably opens up, you know, a little bit more passing lanes, but it seems like most teams make the calculation that taking away that time and space is worth it. And the Sharks are clearly going to the other side of that equation and saying, okay, well, we're going to give them all the time and space that they want. We're going to try and shut down all these passing lanes. And frankly, I just don't think it's working. It's just not working that well.
Right.
You know, it seems like there's too many good passers in this league that they can get, you know, a puck through, you know, they fire a pass through, you know, somebody's legs or over somebody's stick or whatever. And you give them, you know, 5 seconds to line that sucker up. They're going to, you know, you're going to get a guy like Brad Richards that's going to make that pass.
Hello, Dudes on Hockey listeners. This is Doug. The end of our conversation got cut off. Boo technology. So Mike will be back at the end of the week, and we will pick it up there talking about the Detroit game and talking about the Dallas game that happens over the weekend in Colorado. Sharks are looking good, still haven't quite hit their peak, but we got a lot of things to be happy about. So I hope that everyone enjoyed our international podcast, and we will talk to you soon. See you later.